We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time. And welcome to the show, the New Orleans Pelicans. In a completely uninteresting turn of events, we'll be picking sixth in the NBA draft. All of that last podcast I had where we dreamed about what we could do with the first or second pick, or even third pick of the draft. Completely useless. Throw it out the window. So I have brought on Shamit Dua, part of our Bourbon Street Shots family, to talk about the prospects in this draft who maybe we can get with the sixth, and then later 39th and 40th picks of the draft. So Shamit, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Ryan. How about you?
Good. I'm a little disappointed. I guess I shouldn't be, because we had actually a higher percentage chance of actually moving down a slot in the draft than we did at moving up at all. But I got to say, when the sixth pick was about to be opened, I was on edge. I was like, come on, don't show us the Pelicans. And then we got the Pelicans.
I was at a bar with a couple friends, and we were watching them, you know, pull out the cards. And at seven, I was like, don't let it be us. Don't let it be us. And it was the Nuggets. And I was like, there was just a moment of relief. I was like, all right, cool. At least we're going to be where we expected to be. But like you, I was hoping, you know, I was like, please let there be any other team at six.
Right.
Any other. And they showed the Pelicans. I was like, ah, man. But I was like, oh, well, we didn't drop. But then
right.
There was a couple Philly fans next to me. And I'm like, Philly fans in New Orleans? Which is interesting.
How can you be a fan? Like, I guess you could be a fan of any team. I watched the Hornets go pretty bad a couple seasons. So
yeah, and so they were getting pretty hyped after each card was played, and they were very loud when the Lakers were number two.
Yeah,
lucky guys.
Number one is I don't know. Brandon and Ben Simmons they're pretty impressive, but we're not going to talk about those dudes.
Nope.
We're going to talk about the dudes who could actually fall. And here's the interesting thing. At least my take, and what based on what I'm reading, what I'm seeing about these guys, just like my own feelings about what I've seen and their stats and the videos and the tape I've watched of them, I don't know if there is a really clear pecking order after the first two. It wouldn't shock me if the third pick was Dragan Bender.
or if he was the 11th pick of this draft. And I think I can say that for most of the guys. Like, I guess Chris Dunn and Murray would surprise me if they fell further than 6th or 7th. But most of these guys, I can see a scenario where almost every single one of them ends up possibly in the Pelicans' range. Do you think that's a legitimate thing, or do you think, like, there's no way that Chris Dunn will ever fall below 5?
No, I agree with you. I think teams are going to be looking at, like, not best player available because they're going to have no clue who the best player available is. They're going to be like, all right, which one of these guys kind of fits us the best and has the highest ceiling? And they're going to pull the trigger. So I agree.
So I guess what we'll do is we'll talk about the individual guys. I think the easiest one for us to I don't even want to really call it analyze, dispose of, is the guy I just mentioned, Dragan Bender. he's a 7'1", 225-pound international prospect. Apparently some scouts think he's the next Porzingis. Of course, I'm sure people were saying something similar when Andrea Bargnani was coming in and when Nicolas Skidishvili was coming in, that this guy was going to be the next big thing.
Jan Vesely.
Jan Vesely, who went 6th. And we have the immortal picture of him kissing his hot girlfriend. That's pretty much all I remember about Jan Vesely, other than my Wizards fan friend being really depressed about him for 3 years until they got rid of him. But Bender, he's the youngest guy in the draft. He's 18 and a half years old, which you got to take that into account. But he's not even playing for his own team in Israel.
That scares me. And obviously, like, a lot of people say that sometimes coaches in the EuroLeague suppress NBA prospects, so like for their own selfish interest, so they're like, oh well, maybe the NBA shies away from them and we'll get to have them for a longer time. But it's just so hard to evaluate someone that plays 10 minutes a game.
Right. Yeah, I mean, he's supposedly supposed to be a good shooter. His number says good shooters, but is he even taking 1-3 a game? Okay. That doesn't tell you anything at all.
No.
So, as far as I'm concerned, I don't want to see the Pelicans pick Bender, because I have no idea what he'll be. He would terrify me more than any name I could possibly see come up at 6. However, based on where this team is and what we know about Dell Demps, what percentage chance do you think there is that Dragan Bender will be on the Pelicans roster come summer league time?
On the roster? 0.
Yeah. Okay. 0. Yeah, that's my take too. Like, they're not taking this. They're not going to wait.
I think the only way we see that his name pop up next to us on the draft is if we had one of those deals that we had, like, with Nerlens. It's like, all right, if this guy falls, draft him, and we're trading him immediately for whatever.
Right. Yeah, I agree. So, all right, Bender out. No one's going to get Bender. If Dragan Bender is your favorite guy in the draft, sorry, you're out of luck. So let's talk some real prospects. Each of these guys has a chance to fall. I think we'll just talk about this group in a bunch. Chris Dunn, Jamal Murray, Buddy Hield. I have a feeling that one of them will definitely be available at 6. I just have a feeling that somebody will slip into the top 5 and push one of those 3 guys down to 6. So, which of those dudes are you most excited about? If you were basically just told, hey, you have actually the third pick in the draft, so you could pick from any of these guys, and you don't have to really worry about anyone else taking them ahead of you, which one of them are you targeting? So which one are you really hoping slides to us?
It's super tough, but I think I have to go with Buddy.
So what is it that's so attractive about Buddy? 25 points per game?
No, it's not necessarily the points per game. It's two things. One, it's his Curry range. Right? He's an oh-shit shooter. Like, if he has the ball in his hands, somebody is going to be on him, making sure he doesn't get an open look. I don't think we've had a player with that kind of gravity And you got to think, like, okay, well, like, if at worst, like, if nothing else works out for him, he's like a Kyle Korver. There's still one guy that has to chase Korver around at all times, and that can really warp a defense. And I think that aspect is super attractive to me. And the second is that the kid has fire. He lives for big moments, and he's like a tireless worker. So, like, I think that's another quality that I like about him.
So basically, you think his floor is pretty high?
Yeah, I think so. I think just offering the type of spacing for AD to come rolling down the paint is pretty sweet.
Yeah, I like Buddy. I'll still say, like I said this before. The one major red flag, and I am all about passing now, having watched this team for several years, where passing is something that you did only because you got a rebound and you needed to hand it to Drew Holiday. I want guys who are willing passers, capable passers. Buddy Held, I think, had the ball in his hands about 80% of the minutes for Oklahoma, and I'm not sure I'm exaggerating at all. He pretty much had the ball in his hands all the time. And somehow he only managed to get 2 assists per game. That's sub-Eric Gordon level. Like, he should just drive to the basket, trip, fall, have the ball dribble to one of his teammates.
Like, he turned it over more times
than he assisted?
Yeah.
That doesn't surprise me at all. Yeah. Like, it's just, I can't, if they draft Buddy, I'm not going to be upset. I mean, there's no way I can get upset about a guy who can score and shoot like he does. But neither am I, like, that's the guy I want to go after.
Yeah, hopefully it's just, like, the other two are off the board, and we're like, all right, cool, decision's
made. Yep. Yeah, so the guy I would go for is Jamal Murray. And people are probably like, yeah, but he only assisted 2.2 assists per game. So take it all back, Ryan. So, yeah, like, that, again, is the red flag with Murray. The difference is he's barely 19. This is a guy who is in the bottom part of his learning curve, not the middle to end of his learning curve as a basketball player. So even if he ends up just improving slightly in assists per game, that's fine. He's already a very nice shooter. He's already a pretty decent ball handler. I just feel like while his floor is actually significantly lower than Buddy's could be, his ceiling, I feel, is also significantly higher than Buddy's could be. So, and I said this on Twitter, I thought there's basically 3 guys in this draft that I could see turn into all-stars, and I think Murray is one of them. It would surprise me if Buddy got to that level, but it wouldn't surprise me if Murray did. Do you think I'm being overly optimistic about his chances?
No, not at all. I was actually pretty down on Murray up until, like, somewhat recently. I was looking into him more because I feel like, all right, he's going to be in our range. But, like, the first thing, like, you know, that stood out to me was, well, there's a couple things. There was, like, well, first of all, I was watching tape, and I was like, he is god-awful at defense. Like, he has no idea what he's doing. And I'm like,
well, he'll fit in great.
Yeah. Like, hey, welcome to the Pelicans. Sign us up. And I was like, all right, this scares me. And because, like, all right, the two is like, well, he's terrible at defense. Where do you put him? He's not, I don't think, quick enough to guard point guards, and he's definitely not big enough to guard shooting guards. It's like, what are you? And at least with Buddy, is like, he's not a quick guy either, I think. I mean, no one knows their actual numbers because they didn't participate. But Buddy has pretty decent size. Like, he's 6'5 and measured out to like a 6'10 wingspan. Like, that's not bad at all. So
right.
you figure he's got a little bit of more natural tools to work with there. But the second thing with Murray that warmed me up was, like, I watched him shoot. I'm like, wow, this guy, like, didn't have, like, a clear defined role in Kentucky. There was just, like, a bunch of really good people on that roster, and he just somehow still put up 20 points a game. It's like, okay.
Right.
Like,
that's
kind of cool. So I definitely think his ceiling is an all-star. He scares me because of his defense, and he doesn't really stuff the box score in other ways.
So the other guy we didn't mention, neither of us picked, and it seems like half the people in the league are talking about him as the obvious choice for the Pelicans. Mm-hmm. So Chris Dunn, he's Providence, he's a junior, although he is actually, 3 months younger than Buddy? So essentially he is the same age as Buddy. What is your take on Chris? Do you, if Chris Dunn came to this team, move over Drew Holiday?
Move over to the two guard, maybe.
okay.
I've been a pretty big fan of Drew working with another ball handler in the lineup. The Drew Tyreek lineups were going back a few years. I think the past 3 years, every year they've put up a positive net rating, even though Tyreek can't shoot. And so, I feel like that's a pretty good indicator. Drew thrives with someone else that takes some of that responsibility off him. And we've seen his turnovers drop year after year here as well, as he's played more minutes with Tyreek. So I think that helps Drew as well. He can play off the ball. I think Dunn obviously has the size to guard both positions and the athleticism. I think that's attractive. But you worry, is Dunn going to be another Tyreek, And it's are you really upgrading? And clearly, if you draft Dunn, there's not room for all three of Drew, Tyreek, and Dunn.
Yeah. Yeah, he's another guy who needs the ball in his hands. And he can't shoot.
No.
That's actually the number one reason. I want a wing guard that can shoot right now. So,
Baldwin.
Baldwin. you're excited about Baldwin. We haven't gotten to Baldwin yet. Give us a little time. We'll get there.
Yep.
So Chris Dunn, neither of us are super excited about him. If we ended up drafting him, I would actually be a little sad if we took Chris Dunn. And part of it's just I don't like his offensive game that much. He's high turnover. At least he passes, so that's good. But he doesn't shoot very well. I know we need some athleticism. I know we need some defenders, but I just can't see him being on the floor for long minutes, and he's not going to improve dramatically because of how old he is already.
And there's another guy in the second round. It's Gary Payton Jr., or the second. I don't know which one he goes by.
Right.
Who athletically, measurements-wise, statistically, is very, very, very similar to Chris Dunn. And they project him to go around the late 30s, early 40s in the second round, right around where our picks are. And so I'm I trust the experts have better judgment than I do. That's why, Peyton's going in the 40s and not, top five. But I'm just you could probably get a reasonable facsimile of Dunn in Peyton in the second round. That's the route you really wanted to go,
All right, so if they call out that Chris Dunn has been drafted by the Pelicans at number 6, are you sad? Do you knock back a drink? Okay.
I'm sad if Murray and Hield were on the board.
Okay.
Now, if those two were out and it was between Jaylen Brown and Chris Dunn, I think I'd pick Chris Dunn.
Okay. So, yeah, Jaylen Brown is the odd one out. He's top 10 on all kinds of boards out there. The dude is awful. 19 and a half years old. He's the prototypical size for a wing at 6'7", 220. But he was terrible in California this year. 17.7 PER. Just so everybody knows, in college, if your PER isn't above 20, you're not playing very well. The prospects that come to the NBA usually have pretty solid PERs. And just so you know, Anthony Davis was a 35.5 as a freshman. So Jaylen Brown, 17.7 PER. He averaged 14, 5, and 2. If Jaylen Brown is picked at all by the Pelicans, A, do you think they'd even be interested in him? Is he too raw? And B, do you think he's going to be any good?
I think he can be good, but not on the Pelicans. I think he needs the right team to be drafted by. I think he'll be a better ball handling Alonzo G on the Pelicans.
Wow.
I mean, at least the first year. Like, he's like all athleticism, no jump shot, poor free throw shooter. And like with if we're starting Ashik and Tyreek, or even Ashik and AD, like that's three non-shooters if you're gonna put Brown out there. You know, like it's not.
Right.
We've seen that story.
Yeah, it's not pretty.
No.
All right, so after these guys we just talked about, then if you look at it, most draft sites, there's like a run on big men. And here's the reality is, if you go take a look at almost any year's draft, big men who are taken somewhere around pick 10 generally suck.
Yeah.
They really don't have a good track record.
Unless you're Andre Drummond and you didn't drop to 10.
Right, but Andre Drummond was a surprise. Like, I actually went back and looked at one of my old draft posts that I put up, and I was mocking Andre Drummond as the likely bust.
Yeah.
And that, I guess I was, yeah, anyways. I think he actually surprised a lot of people because he fell to 9, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Right. So, but most big men who go 10, around 10, it's because they have a massive hole or two in their game that people just can't really get past. Otherwise, they'd be at the top of the draft because the NBA drafts skilled big men who don't have holes in their game first or second or third. So these are guys who you're just hoping turn into something so they end up around 10. Mm-hmm. So we have a giant list of guys who could all go around there. You got Jacob Pertle. Scal. I'm not going to try his last name because I'm sure I murder it.
CA, I think.
Vissier, is it like a French kind of?
I think so.
Okay. Deonta Davis, Marquise Chris, and Henry Ellenson. All of those guys have kind of gaps in their games. Do any of them interest you a little bit? And B, if you were told that Ashik was being traded away from the team and you needed to draft one of these guys as a big man, who do you think you would go after?
Okay. Oh, shoot. Okay. I like Scal and I like Labissier. I mean, that's the same person. Marquise Chris. I like Marquise Chris.
Okay.
Marquise Chris is a crazy athlete, has showed off a little bit of ball handling potential, potential to, you know, hit jumpers and be a two-way player. I think the idea of small ball with him and AD, like, is really, really attractive. But, like, you read some of the scouting reports, they're like, maybe he doesn't really know how to play basketball. Like, he doesn't have the best feel for the game. It's like, okay, well.
Right, that's what we need is more of those guys.
Yeah, it's like, well, okay. And then, same thing.
But he's also not even 19 yet.
Yeah, no, he's super young and super, super raw. But I think he has a really high ceiling.
Yeah.
And with Labissiere, again, it's a lot of, like, his basketball isn't necessarily there yet. But, like, the raw tools, like, he could be what they call, like, I guess, the unicorn in the NBA. Like, a rim-protecting stretch big.
Yeah.
And, again, that's a great fit next to AD.
Do you think there's a chance he could actually do that?
I think there's a chance.
I think
there's a chance. I'm not going to rule out. Yeah, I think there's a chance.
Okay. So you would go. So if they had to pick, you would go Scal first, or would you go
Scal?
Chris?
I think
okay.
I'd go Scal. I trust Kentucky big men. That sounds cliche, but like I mean, I feel like Calipari has had pretty good results with Kentucky big men in recent years. I can't remember like the last one that wasn't that good, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, if I had to pick one, I would actually go Deonta Davis. I just feel like he has the chance to be a very good rim protector and rebounder and defender.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's much there to his offensive game, but I don't really need... Like, if I'm replacing Ashik, Deonta Davis is going to be fine for me.
Yeah.
And I have a feel like the other guys are too finesse. Like every single one of them, except for, I guess Pertle or Podle or Plittle. I really hope we don't draft him, because if we do, I am going to die. I just feel like all the rest of them are more finesse players. Allinson is supposed to be a shooter who apparently couldn't even shoot 30% from the college three-point line.
Yeah, they're like, he's the next Kevin Love. And it's like, is he really, though?
Right, yeah. So Davis, I just feel like he's got a chance, and you know, he comes from a pretty good program, too, up in Michigan State. So he would be the one I would go with. But again, if we're picking at six, and any of these guys' names get called, and it doesn't end up being a trade, then I'm going to have some unpleasant things to write on the blog the next day.
Same.
Yeah. Just, I'll be 100% honest. The guy who always falls behind them, on almost every list I look at, he comes in around like 13 or 14, sometimes as high as, you know, 12 or 11. I would take Denzel Valentine over every single one of those guys, even if it's considered a reach. How do you feel about Denzel?
I agree with you 100% in taking Denzel over those guys every time. I'm a really, really big fan of his game. I think just the fact that he can rebound, bring the ball off the floor, pass in the open court, and play off the ball and shoot really well, like that. Like, what else do you want from a shooting guard, you know?
He does everything, and I know there's major concerns about his athleticism, whether he can defend. I mean, they actually supposedly had to hide him in games a lot of times against really strong offenses.
I did not know that.
A couple different people were reporting, and Chad Ford has said stuff about that too, that they had to hide him.
His defensive plus-minus is pretty good.
Well, and that could just be the fact he's a smart player and a good help defender. Like, I wonder, is there the potential there that he's actually a pretty good defender in a team concept?
Yeah,
like Kyle Korver is known for his abysmal one-on-one defense.
Exactly.
But in the team concept, he's always been part of really good defenses.
Right, and I mean, Atlanta was like the third best defense this year.
Yeah.
And yeah, I agree. Like, Korver's a great example for some of these guys.
So I am 100% talking myself into Denzel Valentine. So anyone who thinks I'm crazy right now, that's what's happening here. I'm talking myself into Denzel Valentine. I really want him to come to this team because he passes like crazy. He's just a great leader. He's a great shooter. It just would make me feel warm and fuzzy, and I just hope he doesn't bust utterly.
It's just like you look at a guy that does so many things, you're like, at least one of them will work out in the NBA, and it won't be a bust. You know, like, there's so many skills that can translate that he has, like rebounding, passing, shooting. Like, you gotta figure something will work out.
Yeah. So, let me ask you this question. Would you take Denzel Valentine over Buddy?
Oh. You know what?
This is one of those things where, like, everybody looks at these draft orders and they'll feel like they don't want to be seen as stupid.
No, I think I would.
You would?
I think I would.
Really? Okay. You would take him, like, if he was available there at 6 and Buddy was there available at 6, because Valentine will be there at 6. You would take Valentine over Buddy?
Yep, I'll do it.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I was doing when I was looking at this was, well, you know, he's a consensus 12 guy or 10 guy or 11 guy, somewhere around there. So you got to look at the teams that are drafting there, because maybe you could trade down. But the NBA is not the NFL. You don't say, all right, I'm going to trade down 6 spots and you give me a 4th rounder and a 7th rounder and next year give me a 3rd rounder and everybody's fine.
Mm-hmm.
That never happens in the NBA. Like, I think the most recent trade of multi-picks was last year when I think 12 was traded for 16 and 18. And that was it was Denver and Chicago for Doug McDermott.
Oh,
and
Dougie Bucket.
And Gary Harris and somebody else.
Yeah,
I think it's Nurkic. I think you're right. So. Jokic was this year. Oh. Nurkic was the year before with Gary Harris.
Okay.
You got to have your kitchen straight.
Eastern European players.
Right. And so anyways, it doesn't happen until you get into the middle area. So you're not really going to move 6 down to 10 or 11 And what do you demand in that situation? So we go to Milwaukee and we'll say, you can move up to six and take Buddy.
Or
whoever they want. Yeah, they don't want Buddy with Middleton, but I don't know, you can move up and take Chris Dunn, so you can actually have a point guard who's not Michael Carter Williams.
Or Vasquez.
Can
you believe they gave up a first rounder in Norman Powell for Vasquez?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Unbelievable. That gives me hope that someone's dumb enough to take Tyreek with something, but...
Wow.
I don't know.
You're down on Tyreek more than I am, but I am concerned about his knee surgeries, but I remember Tyreek being a very effective player when he's healthy.
He is.
And very good next to Jrue Holiday. So
I give you that. I think if we can get a pick for him and cap space, I think that's even better.
Okay. So anyways, what do you go to Milwaukee and say, what throw in to move up and grab this guy? You give us 10 and we get, what do you take from them? Like
Greg Monroe.
God. Oh. Yeah, there's all the players that you'd want.
Ashik and 6 for Greg Monroe and 10. Would you do that?
In a second.
Would Jason Kidd do that?
I would be stunned. I don't see why anyone would take Ashik at this point just to move up for picks and draft. My take on if you wanted to send out number 6 with Ashik, you're probably getting back 18 or 19 at best.
Gross. I agree though.
I think it's that kind
I
of
think
thing.
So. I still think there's a couple teams that can be talked into the value of a cost control, rim protecting, rebounding big man.
Right.
But I don't think it's very likely. I don't know. But Jason Kidd, Milwaukee doesn't seem happy with Monroe. And he's got a pretty expensive contract.
Yeah, he does. I don't know if I really want him on the Pelicans, because our defense is already abysmal.
Terrible.
So, I mean, and it is getting rid of Ashik. But Ashik, if you go look at his numbers, actually made our defense serviceable when he was on the floor.
Yeah, he was effective in 15 minutes a game.
Right. So I know people want to get rid of Ashik really badly. To me, I think it's just you keep him for the length of the contract and play it out and see what happens.
Yeah.
And hopefully he'll come in a little bit more motivated and less injured.
I think when there's 2 years left on his contract, he's making $10 million a year or $11 million a year, and the cap's $105 million or whatever it is. I think at that point he could probably trade him.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty easily, I think, too.
Yeah.
And maybe that's being optimistic. But anyways, so you said you would take Denzel Valentine? If Jamal Murray is on the table, I would take Jamal Murray. If Buddy Held's on the table, I'd probably take Buddy and feel really bad about it. I wish I had the balls to take Denzel Valentine at this point.
Well, you feel every year there's this guy's going to go third or second, and he ends up dropping to 9. And, mm-hmm. I think, a couple of years back it was Ben McLemore. And then it was Justice Winslow, surprisingly, dropped pretty far. And I wonder who that guy is going to be this year. And I think some team might just reach for Valentine. I feel like a lot of front offices are probably talking themselves into him like you are.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me if he went right around our time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know if it's a bad thing. I really think that he could be a contributor, and I think his floor is probably an eighth or ninth guy on your team.
Yeah.
I don't know. So let's get – we've talked about our love for Denzel Valentine, how we probably would take him a lot higher than a lot of other people would. Let's say something weird happens and some draft goes and either we move back from the six or we trade a player and get a mid-rounder. I don't actually find any of these very likely. I really think either we're going to be out of the draft completely from the six, we'll trade the six for just a player, or we are going to just take the sixth pick and use it. I don't think we'll see us move down a spot or acquire more picks in the first round.
Maybe, like, if Dragon Bender falls, usually, like, you take him at six and you trade him to Toronto for 9 and, what do they have, 27? And at 9 you get Valentine. Well, you only do this if Valentine's on the board.
Right.
Or, actually, that's such a big gamble. What if some other team takes Valentine between at 7 or 8?
Well, you have the agreement. We'll give you Bender for XYZ.
Yeah, and so you trade him for 9 and 27 or whatever it is, and I feel like you walk away with Valentine and, like, Torian Prince or Timothy Luwawu, or however you pronounce his name.
Right.
I feel like I'd do that. I'd do that trade.
Okay. And that could possibly work out.
Yeah, Toronto wants a power forward for sure.
Right. So let's just say, but we end up somewhere in the middle round, you know, right around 15 to 20. That's our pick. And Denzel is off the board, so you can't say Denzel Valentine, because I know how much you love the guy. It's kind of crazy. is that who you're taking, Taurean Prince?
No, at 15 or so, in the middle of it?
Somewhere 15 to 20.
I'm taking Baldwin.
Baldwin. And you mentioned him earlier, so you got a real hankering for Baldwin?
I do. I think, you know,
he's not that impressive stats-wise.
No, he isn't that impressive raw stats-wise, but I think he has a higher ceiling than Chris Dunn.
Okay.
I think he, first of all, the dude can dunk the ball. like, you know,
that's all you need.
All great research started on YouTube mixtapes, and the first like 3 minutes of him are just like dunking in traffic. You're like, okay, this guy's exciting. And he, you know, he's got really good size for a point guard. He's like 6'3", 6'4", a massive wingspan, 7 feet, I think, measured at the combine. He can jump pretty high. He's a decent passer, and he can shoot. He shot like 40% from the three. And so I think if this guy puts it all together, you got an athlete that can shoot and has pretty high defensive potential because of his length. Like, I think he's a sleeper pick in the middle of the first round.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't actually ever seen him play really at all. So I can't argue with you at all. I've kind of stayed away from the middle of the round because I don't think we're going to have a pick there. I will say that the one guy in that range that I do have a soft spot for, and it may just be because I loved watching his father play, and that is Domantas Sabonis out of Gonzaga. Like, he actually has a little bit of the passing gene. He's a scorer in the post. He's a solid rebounder. He's only 20. Like, he's not an older player. He's got room to grow still. Like, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Sabonis was a better version of Cody Zeller.
Yeah, definitely a more offensively gifted version.
Yeah, and Cody Zeller's a pretty solid player. Like, he's not anything to get excited about.
He's the one on the Hornets, right?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, he's the Hornet Zeller.
The Hornet Zeller.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I just, like, if you can get a guy around 17 who would be a perfectly fine third man in a big rotation, like, go for it. And I think he could be that, and maybe even a little more. I really think, like, the guy is a really smart basketball player. So
I agree.
And like I said, I loved watching his father play. That guy could like, he was the better version as a passer than, like, Chris Webber, than Vlade Divac. Like, he was the big man who could just pick out every guy on the floor. He's amazing.
Yeah, didn't he, like, only come over when he was, like, 30?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a shame.
And he looked like a 300-pound mafioso a little bit. And then he got a towel thrown in his face by Rasheed Wallace.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I think a lot of Rasheed's teammates got towels thrown on their faces, though, so just not on TV. So anyways, that is, like, everything I was talking about in the first round. Is there anybody else who's, like, a first-round pick who you just want to mention? Like, hey, this guy was I got an eye on, like another Wade Baldwin, or you think you're good with first rounders?
I'm good. I mean, I mentioned Prince, and that's just because he's like he's a senior because we love seniors.
Right.
He's a very gritty defender. He's got like your ideal size for a small forward. He's like 6'8", with like a long wingspan and all that. He shot the ball really well in college, so there's 3-and-D potential, and so like I feel like he's a role player that you could probably contribute like right away, like playing 5-15 minutes a game, something like that.
Okay. All right, so now let's talk about our other two picks. I need to ask you one question before we do that. And I'm not going to put you on the spot and make you name actual players because it's really hard to know what you could move the sixth pick for, so you don't have to, like, pick players out. But if you had your option, your Dell Demps, you have reasonable basketball player, veteran players you bring in on the wing that you could trade the sixth pick for. Would you rather just stay in the draft and pick anyone, or would you rather have that pick moved for a veteran player?
Yeah, it's a tough question because you don't know who that veteran player is. And
right.
And obviously it's not going to be like a Jimmy Butler because...
Right, you're not getting any of the stars.
You're not getting any of the stars. I think I'd stay in the draft.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I would too because... When we're talking first or second, you're talking difference makers.
Yeah.
I think you're actually trading for a guy who could be the second best player on an actual contending team. The sixth pick of the draft isn't getting you that. Like, no one is going to be trading, Kevin Love for the sixth pick in the draft or anyone of that talent level. You're talking much lower levels than that at that point. And it's even hard to quantify because when is the last time you remember somebody trading, like, the sixth pick or seventh pick? I think Jason Richardson was traded for the ninth pick or eighth pick of the draft at one point from Golden State.
Jeff Green, the fifth pick, I think Ray Allen. Jeff Green, no, what was the Jeff? There was Jeff Green and the fifth pick were related.
Yeah,
they
were traded for, I think, Ray Allen.
Yeah.
But then Ray Allen won it out at that point, too. So.
Yeah.
It's just it doesn't happen very often, and you know, if you can get someone like Jason Richardson for that pick, that's pretty decent. Richardson was on the downside of his career at that point, but he was still a good shooter and a good dunker, so that's not bad. That's kind of what you're looking at.
Yeah.
But there aren't a lot of those guys going to be available, so I'd rather them pick anything at the sixth pick.
Yeah.
Than trade it for a veteran. Anything.
I agree. Unless there's
even if it's Dragon Bender.
Unless there is a surprise candidate like Bledsoe.
Yeah.
But he's not a wing. But I feel like Bledsoe would intrigue me straight up for the sixth pick. But I don't think that's realistic.
Yeah, you want another guy with a horrible injury history coming to the Pelicans? You have a stronger stomach than I do.
I guess I'm more positive. I don't know.
Wait, should we say it again? It can't be any worse than last year, right?
Oh, man, let's not say that. It can be and probably will be.
Yeah, oh, my God. All right, so let's talk the 39th and 40th pick. This is the Ish Smith gold mine. We traded Ish Smith for what ended up being the 39th and 40th picks of the draft. If anybody wants to get an idea what those picks generally produce, go to bourbonstreetshots.com, take a look at my value of a draft pick post I put up today. It gives you historically what those picks have given or generated for the teams that drafted there. It's not much. Don't get too excited.
Although there was a pretty cool post that someone did on Reddit, and they analyzed what percentage of the top 15 players of a current draft class are available at what pick. And at every single draft, like the last 20 years or so, there's been a top 15 player in the draft class available at pick 40. So
yeah, that's probably true. Because when you look at the numbers, after pick 38, like half the picks, there is a star that has been generated by those picks. And I think I remember from my numbers, it was of those 22 picks, two guys will end up sticking on rosters for a good portion of their career.
Yeah, so you just got to hope you're smarter than the other teams.
Than everybody else, right. So let's pretend that you and I are smarter than everybody else.
Totally.
And you're picking at the 39th, and it's complete crapshoot. Like, at this point, you go look at these draft boards, and there's, you know, at number 25 is Cheick Diallo, and 24 is Malik Beasley. Like, the guys who are set to be, like, 23rd, 24th, or 25th, they slide to 40 all the time in these.
Yeah.
So basically go look at your draft boards, and available at 439, you'll probably have a couple guys who are slated in the early 20s. It's just how these things work out.
I wouldn't be surprised if Luau dropped. They're hearing, like, you know, like, he didn't play so well in the Euro leagues. The scouts weren't really, like, impressed by him. So, like,
right.
If he drops, like, I mean, he'd be worth the look.
Yeah, Luau is actually... I read an article about his team, which is really fascinating. They actually did pretty well in their league, but apparently also it was an agency-run team. It was basically a bunch of agents got together, got all the 22 and under stars from their region to sign with them, and then they made a team of those guys, entered it into the league, and then had them play in a super high-paced way so that their stats would be inflated.
That's crazy.
Isn't that fast? So that their guys would be attractive to NBA scouts. But the weird part is, like, you can sit there and mock them. Oh, hey, they're a bunch of agents. They're just playing it away to attract NBA scouts. But I think they ended up, like, third in their league.
Yeah, so
22-year-olds. It's 22 and younger. There's nobody over 22. And that team was beating everybody, almost. That's impressive.
Especially because you think, like, you know, European teams, they have a lot more continuity than the NBA teams, and experience matters a lot, and chemistry matters a lot more in those leagues. So, like,
yep.
That's pretty impressive. I had no idea.
Yeah, I thought that was fascinating. But anyways, let's just say you are smarter than everybody else. You're picking 39th or 40th. Del Demps calls up and says, I'm on vacation now. I got my buddy. We're good. So you can pick the 39th or 40th because I think, you know, we're tight like that. So who you going for? And you can pick anybody from, like, you know, on whatever list you're looking at, say 26 and higher.
Okay. Oh, 26 and higher. I'll stick with the guys that are, like, mostly past 30.
Okay.
I think it's the first runner guys, you have no idea who's going to be what. There's four guys I really like in the second round. And I'll name a fifth, but I'm gonna focus on four guys.
Okay.
Since we're sticking with my fetish for injured players, is Caris LeVert. I think in 39 and 40, you got to swing for the fences. It's a lottery ticket. And so I think he is a guy that has the potential to be a very, very talented. I think he has all-star potential. Not necessarily, what do you call it, quasi-all-star potential, like a Nick Batum, you know?
Okay.
He's 6'7", very good at handling the ball. I think he averages, like, 5-6 assists a game. He shoots, like, 40-something percent from three. He can flat-out score. He's like Sean Livingston with a jump shot. That's what he reminds me of.
Huh.
But the problem is, and it's a pretty, pretty big problem, is he's had a stress fracture in his foot or some similar issue that's bothered him for the better part of 2 years, which sounds very familiar.
Yeah.
And so you draft him, you know, hoping, like, okay, you put him through the same treatment. You'd put Drew, and he has a really high ceiling, so you figured he can contribute. But he can't play basketball, like, until, like, 4 weeks. Like, he's in a boot at the moment. And so, like, he won't be able to, like, work out until, like, 4 weeks from now or something like that.
Huh.
So that's the risk you run with him.
You're not selling him to me right now.
Eh, well. Again, I think we got to start our research at the YouTube mixtapes.
That's right. Can he dunk?
He can dunk.
So who else you got? You said you got four people.
Yeah. My second guy, I think it's actually pretty likely that we draft him, is Paul Zipser. He's a guy. I think he plays on a German team. He's like your prototypical small forward build. He's like 6'8", like 6'10", wingspan, something like that. Shoots the ball pretty well. I think he's shooting like 40-something% from three. He plays above the rim. He's really athletic. He can rebound. And the best part is he plays within the system. He makes all the extra passes. He plays really hard on defense. So, like, I think he's the type of person that can be a role player, like, immediately. That's what, like, if you look at what kind of people Dell has drafted in the second round, I can't remember the last time he drafted someone that was not a senior. And so I think Zipser fills that age group. He's 22, he's experienced, mm-hmm. and he plays the position in need.
Okay.
The third guy I really liked was A.J. Hammonds. This dude is absolutely massive. He's 7 foot, 280. absolutely abused everyone in college, which you would expect from an almost 24-year-old. But I think, you know, none of our big men are really cutting it, and if you kind of hit the lottery with him, he could be like a Whiteside type player, in the sense that, like, no one really expected him to do much, but, like, here he is using his sheer athleticism and size. He's got a nice jump shot for a big. I think he can step out to the college three. So,
wow, he's a stretch five.
Yeah. Well, when he gets
or
high,
something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and he's just absolutely massive, and being 280 is big for the NBA, much less college, you know.
So, is there a potential he could be like Aaron Gray?
Ooh, I think so. I think a better shot blocking Aaron Gray. Yeah.
I remember at one time Aaron Gray was our center of the future.
Yeah, that Lakers series, man. He
he dominated. It was amazing.
Him going up against Bynum and Powell, like, it was. I think he has some serious Aaron Gray potential.
Okay. I'm good. I'm on board.
Yeah, and the last guy I was interested in was son of former All-Star Gary Payton. So Gary Payton II. I think he's like a knockoff Chris Dunn. Very similar stats, very similar build. Both can't shoot, but are like crazy good athletes and defenders. Both are about the same age. I think he's a guy, like, you know, you miss out on Dunn, you try to find a replicate of him in the second round.
And he's got a nice, well-rounded stat line too.
Yeah, he's not afraid to rebound, which is
he's a rebounder and a passer and as a point guard but he's also almost 24 as well.
Yeah.
But I mean, Tim Frazier is 25, so
yeah.
Like we're talking these guys who are going to be fighting at the bottom end of the thing. Who cares if they're 18 or
right.
The 25? There's only one guy you haven't mentioned that I would be interested in. I think you said you had a fifth one. Who's the fifth one you were going to mention, just out of curiosity?
Thon Maker?
God, Thon Maker. He scares me.
Yeah, I think that's where you swing for the fences. If he's
see what he
40,
can turn into?
Yeah, I think you see what he can turn into.
Yeah. The one guy I'm a little interested in is the kid out of North Carolina. And I know that there was some issues possibly with maturity, they called it. But Bryce Johnson, at least you know he is coming in with a discernible talent.
Jesus, a 35 PER? yeah, that's talent.
Yeah, I mean, he's not the most amazing talented scorer in the world, but he can rebound like you would believe. He's big enough to be able to do that. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up being John Henson. And I think, like, the floor of him is kind of like what Thomas Robinson turned out to actually be in the NBA, which is a journeyman center who's going to come in and give you lots of energy and do some dirty work for you.
You think he can play center?
He's probably too skinny.
Okay.
But he can get out, come out, and, you know, if you're playing Anthony Davis at center, and you just need a guy who's going to crash the boards like crazy next to him, Johnson could do that for a short time.
Yeah. Okay.
So
I see that.
But I don't really get excited about too many other people.
Oh, I forgot to mention Patrick McCaw.
Okay.
He's a guy that many people are now projecting to go into the first round after the combine. But he's a wing out of UNLV. He can pass the ball a little. He can rebound the ball. He has shooting potential. He's an absolutely phenomenal on-the-ball defender. He racks up steals really well. He has good hands. Issue is he's 180 pounds. He's 6'7", 180. he's a twig, but I think he's a guy that, you know, he bulks up a little, could be a very solid defensive player in this league.
Could be Corey Brewer.
Actually, that's a better passing Corey Brewer.
Yeah, Brewer had some passing instincts when he was in college too. So,
yeah.
But I mean, yeah, well, he was doing 4 a game. Patrick McCaw was. Although it was in 34 minutes, so he did play quite a bit. But, yeah, I mean, there are guys there who could turn into something. So, as much as I want to point out that second-round picks turn into nothing ever, there's a chance. There's always a chance, right?
Even, like, Withy and Darius Miller, like, played minutes for us and, like, had, like, one or two moments, you know?
Yeah.
So, there's a chance.
Good God. Darius Miller.
I just remember Darius Miller had... It was when Tyreek scored like 40 on OKC. I think that game, like Miller, like not exactly locked up KD, but like frustrated him
yeah,
a lot.
I remember that.
And I was like, wow, this guy has been, like, maybe he can figure it out one day. And then, you know.
He did.
No. Nope.
Yeah. So Caris LeVert, that's your guy?
Yep.
28.8 PER. Had some pretty nice years.
Yeah.
So, that's our draft podcast. Did you have anything else that you wanted to talk about? Like any players that you wanted to mention that you don't, that, you know, we haven't said anything about, or someone who would terrify you if they ended up on our team? Like you just think there's no way that guy has any chance?
I don't really want Pirtle or another big man.
Okay.
I would cry if we got another big man in the first round. That's about it.
Yeah. I had a couple questions from Twitter I wanted to hit you with, and just we've mentioned actually most of the ones we got, but what do you think if Philly takes Ingram and they now have their small forward of the future, do you think that we could pry Dario Saric from Philly for our sixth pick, and would you do that?
God. One, I'd say no, because I think Saric himself was like the 10th or 12th pick.
He's 12th, yeah.
Yeah, and no one really, again, he's another guy like Bender, like how good is he really? You know?
Right.
So definitely not for the 6th pick. And I think there's been issues with his contract, like no one really knows when he's coming to the NBA. And so I think... Myself, definitely, and I think the team would stay away from Sarge. I could be wrong,
yeah.
Though. I don't know. Dell has a pretty good international scouting staff. I mean, we've seen him draw rotation players from Europe, and then, you know, he really liked the Greek Freak previously. So.
Yeah, and he was also high on Sarge for a while.
Yeah.
I will say this about Sarge. This season in the EuroLeague, the knock on Saric before was he was not that great of a shooter. He took 3 3-pointers a game and hit 40% of them. And he also shot 94% from the free throw line.
Wow. What is his position really? He's a 7-footer, right?
He's 6'10". There's like comparisons of him to Kukoc out there, but he's never even in the same stratosphere as Kukoc as a passer.
Right.
Kukoc is a really good passer, and Saric is not. So,
would he be like a stretch four-ish?
I don't like this player. But I wouldn't be shocked if he ended up being a Jeff Green-esque kind of guy. So a guy who could play either the 3 or the 4 and do a little bit of either for you, but probably neither very well.
Yeah, hopefully not maddeningly inconsistent like Jeff.
Right. That's true. But if he could shoot like that, like at some point you just got like 94% from the free throw line is pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's not many people can do that.
Although he only took 2 a game.
Well, remember that like you hear like Brian Roberts didn't miss a free throw for like 80 games or however many games.
Yeah, he's very impressive. Yeah. So it's it'll be interesting to see. I would not go for Saric just because he doesn't have the all around game that I really want, and we can get shooters just fine. I don't need another shooter like him.
Would you give Jeff Green a contract this summer?
No.
Any contract?
No. I have absolutely no interest in Jeff Green at all. He is Rudy Gay to me. Like there's no difference.
I agree. I mean, they're the same tier of like this guy like can maybe put up some numbers, but it'll probably hurt your team. But most definitely hurt your team.
Yeah. And the last question that I had from Twitter. This pick, if we end up getting one of those guys we talked about earlier, Dunn or Buddy or Murray, which are, I feel like they're the most likely outcomes, do you think that has any sort of impact on our free agency targets?
No.
Like, are they going to make any change on who they're going after?
No. I think none of those guys fill the need of the 6'7 playmaking defense playing wing.
Right.
Which will probably be our target in free agency, just like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it changes our plan overall, because, again, you can't rely on rookies to contribute the first year, and you probably shouldn't plan. Like, you know, like, we drafted AD, but we also, like, signed Ryan Anderson because, I don't know, I guess we wanted production from that position at some point. I don't know. But I don't think it changes our plan of free agents. We'll probably go after athletic wings.
Right. And honestly, doesn't really matter. Like, whoever you sign, who's, if they're a competent wing, you're going to be able to trade them later. If this rookie turns into something amazing, you'll make it work.
Yeah.
It's the only people who you should be like, all right, I am reserving a slot for is one of those top 2 guys.
Right.
So.
I agree.
Although I will say, like, I am sure that there will be plenty of people who are ranting. Like, I love the Lakers fans who ranted about how little D'Angelo Russell played this year. He's a young rookie, and he played, like, 27 minutes a game. Like, what, did you expect him to play 40? Like,
well, Damian Lillard did.
That's true.
In the league in minutes.
He led the league in minutes, yeah. But he was also 23, I think, at the time.
Yeah, he's built different, too. Very well conditioned. Yeah.
He's a machine. So, I guess that's it. Unless you had anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, I think we covered it all.
All right, so thanks everybody for listening to In the Know.